Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. This is your host, Kevin S. Fox, coming to you from Salzburg, Austria, at Radio Fabrique. Tonight's episode, our third, is a dialogue with the artist, the German artist, Berthe Endriat. Stay tuned as we speak with Berthe about the role of the artist and her own artistic practices as they relate to space and place. We'll talk a little bit about the work she's done with the collective MARC, especially when they came here to Salzburg to help citizens interrogate their own city. While you're listening, check out Berthe's website at www.bertheendriat.com. I'll spell that for you. BIRTEENDREJAT.com. And check out our own website, geographicalimaginations.org, to follow and check up on any updates. And follow our blog as well, and any updates to future episodes. So, without anything more to say, I'd actually like to go to our conversation with Berthe. So, it's our pleasure to introduce Berthe Endriat here to the show for episode 3. She's on the line with us. We're actually speaking on Skype. And she is... actually, where are you right now?
I'm in Berlin.
You're in Berlin, right. And you currently actually live in Berlin.
Yes, I do. Since 2009, I came back from Montreal and came back to Berlin. I was living here before about 10 years ago, and then I decided to come back here.
Excellent. So, well, welcome to the show. And we first met in Salzburg back in the fall, just a couple months ago. When you were here to talk about or setting up for a project that you were working with the collective MARC, would you tell us a little bit about the project?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are 5 people with MARC, and we are always working in formats that are dealing with a specific context or a specific place, and we developed a format for cities that we don't know yet, and there was an open call for a venue in Salzburg, and then we developed the project, which is Frag Salzburg, and we asked all the people who live in the town to pose a question to their own town, and then we would develop like different formats like postcards and website and posters and I think that's it.
Yeah.
To contact the people and to collect their questions. Yeah, we came back to several times to get in touch with different people there, and eventually we showed all the collected questions in an exhibition in November.
Right, and so the premiere was in November. And all of you came from Germany to do that here, correct?
Yes, which is quite rare, actually, since we're living in different cities. And we work together since 2007. And there, back then, we were living all in Bremen in Germany.
Uh-huh.
But now it's really always for us also a highlight to meet and to spend some time together. So it was quite nice to have that in Salzburg.
Right. And so the project itself, just for the English audience, the Frag means ask. Is that basically the translation? Yeah. So ask Salzburg.
Yeah, our blog was also, we thought we'd do that very international, like for a start and for also for a future incident or for a future exhibition, we set up the blog like Ask Your Town. So it would be like just pose, I don't know if it would be more precise to say pose a question to your town, but I think ask your town is quite right also.
Right, right.
Isn't it? I don't know.
No, ask your town. I think ask your town. I like that. I mean, it presupposes this idea that the town kind of lives, right? The town itself has sort of a life, and the space of the town is vibrant. So ask your town is kind of, to me, kind of lends into that. A way of thinking about towns as not being these sort of static entities with just lines around them, but yet these more dynamic kind of spaces where, and giving people the ability to ask a question is quite simple, but yet I think at the same time pretty powerful. Is that kind of your thinking, Mark's thinking on with the project?
Yeah, I think that's very precisely what we have in mind. We also developed this format before and for different things, not just cities, but we use it in our own work to somehow get the idea of something or to become clear about an something that we have in mind but can't really express it. So if we start a new work, we very often use this method of setting up 30 questions or posing 30 questions to the thing we want to know more about. So that can also be like a venue or a space or the visitor, which is still like the unknown visitor who will come to a show, or it can also be like there it was the work was very much also about participation.
Right.
So in beforehand or in the preparation, we were also posing 30 questions to the participation. So what does it really mean? And also we did it as an exercise to ask our own towns where we are living in, just to see like what comes together and what, yeah, how it works basically. And then when we communicated it to different people who are not familiar with this mode of posing questions to something more abstract, we always said, like, imagine you would meet Salzburg as a person, and then you have the chance to pose the question, like, as if it is someone you would just run into on the street, or, yeah.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, your tour guide into the geographies of everything and nothing. Look for us on the internet at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Let's get back to the dialogue. If we're thinking about, you know, the sciences, the natural sciences, the scientific method says to kind of come up with a question or a hypothesis. Social scientists might actually say, well, let's plant a question here. Let's ask a question and see what we can find. Would you say, I mean, artists do the same thing in some ways, right?
Yeah, but in this case, for example, it's not about the town, but it is like addressing the town directly, and I think that's a big difference, and that's also what's making the question also already being the answer and being the result somehow, because then if you talk like our experience in this work was also that adults or even like elderly people, they had really problems in posing a question to like addressing the town directly, and we had to always make examples, and the kids were really easygoing with it. They could imagine that easily. And I think like if you're working as in different fields, and then you raise questions, but then you want to gain knowledge like by answering the question, or like you are in the path of answering it. But here it's really like collecting these questions, we're already talking about the town and about, yeah, what, I mean, it was giving so much of information about this place that we didn't know before, that when we came back to the city, we really had the impression of, yeah, we have an inside view of Salzburg now, because like by these questions, people were telling us so much, but in a very precise and short form, and not with a lot of detours, because these questions are very direct.
Right. So, okay, so it's not so much a problem to ask a question. It's when you say ask a question to a town that it becomes difficult. Okay, so it's a bit of a difference.
Well, but it's also very easy, I think, because yeah. We had like a lot of side conversations with the people while like collecting the questions, and they then asked, so, aha, so this is actually a forum where I can say where I can complain, or where I can, I don't know. So you're collecting new ideas to develop the city. And we were like, no, we actually don't. We are just artists and we just collect these questions and we have to disappoint you. We are not like going to change Salzburg to your wishes or something like that. But well, now I have lost my strength. But yeah, so it can also be easy to pose the question, or it can be very difficult because people just like have different modes of functioning or understanding this this task, actually.
Yeah. So what is the role of the artist then here?
I mean, it's the artist is also seen, I think, as the questioner, or as the person who raises the questions about the world and then gets deeper into a new perspective, a new view towards the world. And yeah, I think that's also quite a bit of an older understanding of the artist, like being outside of the society and able to pose the question. And I think nowadays we are very much in the middle also, but yeah. I think it's still a role of the artist also to raise questions or to question something that, yeah, you come upon or you.
Right. Yeah. Do you think the role too is to sort of propose alternative ways of thinking?
I'm not so sure about that. That would also be like a very applied task, I think.
Yeah.
That's probably more the task of an architect. I don't know. I mean, they are also in roles of questioning what is built or where we're going with our architecture today, or with our understanding of communities, houses, and urban structures. But I'm not sure about the artist, like, really coming up with an alternative, but I mean, to me, it's more pointing out what I don't understand and putting that into a possibility for others to think about. So it's more developing a form for something that I don't find any results, but would like to invite people to think about it.
Do you use the word intervention at all? Like, do you see it as?
Yeah, I see it as interventions, but for raising, like, ideas or thoughts, more than to show a result that people then can take and see it as a fixed idea. So
right.
I'm more working in progresses, and very often I don't even know when a work is finished, or I bring it to a certain point, but I still have in mind like lots of different options how I can also deal with it. So it's more I'm getting into topics, and then it opens many different paths to go, and then I take one, but I still have 5 or 10 or 15 in mind that I could also take. So it's like a net that I'm knitting or
or sewing together, right?
So it's not like a work is planned like from the beginning to an end point, which would be clear to me from the beginning. It's very much like I'm interested in a context or in a specific place or room or a topic, like how people are dealing with a space, and then I'm just getting into it, and by doing it I'm becoming more clear about what I'm actually doing. So it's very unscientific, I think, where you would pose the questions in the beginning and that gives you a direction to move further, and then I'm much more like doing a broad investigation and then see what comes up, and then I decide on the next step, and then I'll see. So I never know where I end up.
Right, it's like that iterative process of kind of jumping in, or to use the net kind of idea that you threw out there, it's like you cast a wide net and you're open to different ideas, different possibilities, and then to see where a question could even surface or come out of just sort of being open to that, right, and being in that space, whether it's discursive or physical. And allowing that to be sort of a I guess we could say a dialogue with the space in some ways, right?
It's very much about like getting to know your opposite or what you're dealing with, and not taking the position of knowing something and applying it.
You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. To hear archived episodes, check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org and click on the tab Episodes. Tonight we're talking with the German artist Berthe Endriat about her artistic practices and how they relate to space and place. So let's get back to our discussion about how to ask your town questions. Like, what were some of the oddest or some of the more interesting questions that people submitted to you?
I was quite surprised by the poetic level they had very often. Or also, I mean, I'm very drawn to the funny questions, which are more playing with the idea of Salzburg being a person. I mean, there was one asking about the big nose, like, why do you have such a big nose? And also many questions about like actual political things, like what is your problem with people begging in the streets, or why is your like the center of the town, why is it just serving the tourists and not the people living in the town anymore, and stuff like this. So people would also express something that they are not, that they don't agree with, or
right.
But there were many questions that were interesting in itself, and as I said, like giving so much information about what's going on and what people think. So it's always these two different levels of information in the question about the town, but also very much about the person posing the question. So it's like there's two layers of information that meet in the question.
Right, right. Now I wanna shift a little bit our conversation to your own work and ask about one of the things I found, I guess, from your website, but even in our previous conversation, was your methods, or were your methods of observation, your ways, your actual ways of interrogating spaces. Could we talk a little bit about that, I guess?
I did site-specific observation of half-public sites, such as an airport or a supermarket or a church or cemetery. And I recorded what people are doing there. I mean, not in a way, like I recorded it as if I instructed people to do something there. So in the end, the sentences were ringing a bell or something.
I'm bad
with examples, but it was like something that I observed people doing there, and then I would write it down as an instruction, basically.
Right.
And in the end, I developed a map for every day from one of these sites. So then one would be from the airport, and then I had about an hour of observation at the airport as a written text on the map. And if you would see it, it would always be displayed one day after the happening, so, and in the gallery space. So then you would still not know if that was actually a performance that I wrote and had people acting it out, or if it was something that I just made up, or if I really observed these things.
Huh. And so this is part of what you're asking people to consider, I guess, right?
When they the beginning. I mean that work was 2009, it also has had some other works which led to that format. But, or that form of the work. But there, it was really the question about a performance and what a performance really is, and how you can actually see performances if you would just change your mindset about what a performance is in everyday's surrounding. And also I was getting into this question of how much the space itself forms a specific behavior, or how it generates people's behavior.
Right. So the space itself, in some ways, is alive. Kind of like the way you're asking the question to Salzburg, is seeing a space as being in some ways alive and vibrant, and with the potential of, because a space could be so trained, the potential of then it training people. And I use the word training. Others might use the word disciplining. It disciplines a person to act a certain way. I think that's kind of one of these theories in geography that a lot of people have talked about, is how a space gets produced, and then how that space itself kind of produces the practices or the way people act in everyday ways, even. Yeah.
And I was also questioning, or I had in mind the question, how much the people who invented the space are still present in the actions of people there. So if, for example, later on, I did that in museums also, I observed people in museums, and I wanted to see, I didn't do an empiric investigation, and I didn't really try to find an answer to it, but the question I had in mind was how much of the structure and the director and the board and the architect and all this set of rules and all this is can be seen in the action of the visitor in the space. Like, how much does all this work on someone? And I mean this isn't just, or you can not just apply it to museums, but I think you can sometimes really feel a certain pressure, like if you go into specific shops or into, I don't know, specific places, or then you have different feelings. And of course, it's also by the atmosphere created by the decorator, but it's also this structure of this space that you can feel when entering it. And I was wondering if just by observing people's actions there, if I can come closer to this hidden structure behind the place.
Right, right. I want to go back to you were using the word before, performance, and the idea of we don't have to think about performance just in, you know, at the cultural center, someone's going to do something tonight at 7, let's go and watch this. Mm-hmm. But yet, I mean, would you use the term, these spaces are being performed, the museum space is being performed?
I really have my difficulties with the word performance. I mean, it's very nowadays it's used everywhere, and I see it
Right.
on every vacuum cleaner and on bikes, and I don't know, in car advertisement it's used like almost everywhere, and it's really, I don't know, it's so empty for me, so I can't really say if I would say a space is performed, because I really lost the insight of the word.
Yeah.
And I sometimes, yeah, it's quite difficult for me also to find a new word for it, but I sometimes say just say it's acted out, or it's
Yeah, would you discuss a little bit of your methodology for kind of getting at this museum space? And maybe that'll kind of help us kind of come at the terminology, because performance, I agree, I think it's in a lot of kind of key terms that we use in even academia, become recodified or lose meaning because they get so overused. But I think it's still important to get at what we mean by, what you were looking at that museum space. So, I mean, what would you do? You would sit in one place.
No, I would walk around the museum, and I did that in more than 20 museums in different cities in different countries. And I wouldn't follow one person. I would just walk around in the museum freely and try to observe or catch like the most common actings which I saw there. So I would just walk around with a sheet of paper and a pencil and write down actions that I saw. And not, I mean, that's really hard to focus actually on things that are very general or very un extraordinary. I
Completely
mean, just
mundane.
something that wouldn't catch your attention. So you would always have to focus back on things that are very, very normal, and not just follow the kid jumping around or something like this. That would usually attract you much more. And so I always had to come back, like, to okay, just to watch the ordinary.
Did you have a profile of a person you would follow?
No, I
Just,
wouldn't focus on one person.
yeah.
It's also this selection I had to do all the time, because there's so much happening all the time. And then, I mean, I didn't have much time to decide on if this is now more, I mean, I can't even say interesting, more something I would use for the work or something else, because I mean, I was just there writing all the time and trying to catch as much as I can without doing a conscious selection. But of course I had to select, because there were 10,000 things happening at the same time.
Right, so there's some selection happening. You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, Brief Expeditions into the Geographies of Everything and Nothing. Tonight's episode, we're speaking with the German artist Birte Endriat from Berlin. For more information about her or about the show, check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Let's get back to the dialogue.
It's always really difficult, I think, to say like how something is coming to the world, or like in terms of the spring of inspiration, or if people ask me like, yeah, so where do you take your ideas from and all this, so I'm always saying like, yeah, okay, I'm just observing and just seeing things as they come. But also sometimes I can see after a while how something led to something else. So I was wondering where this works came from or where the interest for this actings in spaces came from. So I was trying to think about the different ways how it came together that I developed this thing and not something else. And then I remember that, for example, I was like my father was a parcel deliverer, and I would come with him in my holidays, like to bring the parcels to people.
Right.
And there was this thing in the car. I don't a tachometer, you would say in German. It's like a tachograph. You know this? Mm-hmm. It's like a little needle that it's a record of the speed of the car during the whole day. So that, I mean,
right.
In lorries also use it. And I was totally fascinated by that thing that would record like every movement of the car, like the whole way we did during the whole day, I thought, was recorded on this thing.
The speed is recorded.
The speed is recorded, but in my understanding, I thought it would track like the movement of the car. And I think back then, I mean, we didn't have GPS and Google, whatever. I mean, nowadays you could do that easily with all your devices, like following your ways through the city. But then I thought I would become my own tachograph and then would track like all the movements that we did with the car on a sheet of paper. So I was trying not to draw and stay still with my pencil on the paper. And then in the end, I would have like these weird drawings of the day moving around. So this, that's a big detour now, but
not really. But it's a different form of mapping, right? I mean, it's taking...
Yeah. Exactly. It was, I mean, just my misunderstanding of that thing was then leading, okay, I want to track how I'm moving through the space. And that's probably, I mean, I can't really say that, but probably giving making the way to further drawings that I did during my studies. That was also just drawing lines from birds in the sky or from actions of specific things around me. So I would have tons of drawings just with one line on one paper. But it was a specific movement. And sometimes I would wait for that movement for 2 or 3 hours to happen. And so that is where I think the observation part comes from, or that was... the way of how it developed until now.
So in terms of the language and the conceptual language that we're going to use, I found it really interesting in our conversation that we really found both of us wanting to challenge this idea of performance and then coming up with this word acting and how it kind of gets connected to, at least colloquially, with the idea of a script. So let's hear again from Berta.
The better word for this to describe what people are doing, because it seems to have like a strong written script behind it, which we are just acting it out without reading it. So it has like some it's like an automatic reaction of that we have to the space. When we enter a swimming pool, we act differently than entering a library and all this. I mean, that's very clear, but also we stop thinking about all this this text which is behind all these spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And when I, for example, lived in Montreal for a year. In the beginning, I remember that everything was new to me and I was looking very much at the differences. And then I became more and more interested in how much the spaces are similar or even the same. I mean, if you go to an airport, wherever, it's more or less the same wherever you are. It's like these places that have no... connection to its surrounding anymore. It's like they're so specific in what you're doing there that it can be, yeah, it doesn't have to be in one country or the other, because it's so written what is going on there.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think written, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I hear the word inscribed, codified a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, something becomes codified. Mm-hmm. It's encoded, really, by those practices, by the way we are supposed to, and it's not just the way we're supposed to act, like, although that's kind of where this comes from, I think, this acting's, right? The way we're supposed to act in church, right? The way we're supposed to act.
Yeah, but it's not just supposed. I think that's also, I mean, that's, of course, the first thing that I would also say, we're supposed to do this and this. But then if you think about it, it's also how you make the place work. I mean, if you act differently, it doesn't work anymore. I mean, you are not, you can't deal with the space then, or with the place, how it's designed, or if you want to, I mean, you have to follow it so it serves you in a way. And you might still have a freedom to act differently, but then you get into trouble or into problems, or something else might happen. So
Do you just get considered then out of place? Is that kind of...
Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, especially in these, like, for example, I did observations in a casino also in Montreal. And there, the script is very narrow. You're not, for example, I mean, you become a suspicious object already when you just stand somewhere in the corner and observe people and take notes. That's something you shouldn't do in a casino, for example.
Right.
So, or in a supermarket also. I really got into trouble just by walking down the lines and taking notes on people, because they thought they just asked me to go out and leave the room because they thought I'm just doing something that I shouldn't do there because I'm not shopping.
So you got kicked out of a supermarket?
Yeah. Yeah, so, but then it really, I mean, just by doing the work or doing the observations, then I realized again, or even more, because maybe for the first time I entered a supermarket not to buy something or not to look at the shelves and not to walk around like anyone else. But I went there to take notes on people doing something in the supermarket. And that was already out of the convention that is allowed to do in a supermarket.
Right. It's just off the script. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're not being asked to improvise on the script.
Exactly.
Any other places where, I mean, even if it was just questioned, not necessarily kicked out, but was it questioned what you were doing in say, an airport?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. No, as I said, in the casino, it was, I had five or six security guards surrounding me and observing me all the time. So then I went back to a table and played a little bit of roulette. And then
Did you win?
I won 50 bucks, I think.
Nice. Did they think you were studying, studying poker or something?
Yeah, I think they, I mean, of course, in the casino, it's, they're very, very careful of what people are doing and what are they writing down and whatever. And I think they thought I'm studying different strategies to fool them or to, I don't know, to win in the end. Yeah.
Right. Listening to Geographical Imaginations,
brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Tonight we're speaking to the German artist Birte Endriat about her own practices and how she conceptualizes space. Check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org for more information. Let's get back to Birte. So one of the things I wanted to get out of our conversation is a little bit, you know, one of the questions we're posing here, one of the ideas, I guess, of this project, this show, is to look for ways in which we can expand our own geographical imagination or spatial consciousness, whichever way you'd like to think about it, if they really are different. But it's, so how, what can we take from asking the city questions and actually not just a city, but any space we've kind of abstracted and generalized and not really dug deep into, but anything that we've considered a space that does have some sort of life, what do we get by asking it questions? And so what do you think people who've worked with you, in especially in maybe some of your workshops, what are some of the things they take away?
It's also giving them the consciousness that they are part of the structure and they're not just passive. They can be an active part of the structure, making their own spaces. Like, this is, I think, the main approach in this project. I mean, of course, this work in Salzburg, asking people to ask their own town, is not in the end, I mean, it doesn't make a new town, but it very much talks about what is there. And we asked people from Salzburg who saw the work if they think that, or if it's new information for them, or if it's more or less what they had in mind about Salzburg. And they said, even though, of course, we didn't reach all the people there and we didn't get 50,000 questions, it was still a very good covering of the different ideas that they had in mind from Salzburg. And of course, it was also adding something to it. So what they wouldn't have thought, or if they would describe their place, they wouldn't have come to this and this thing.
Right. And it puts someone in the position of understanding that they could be in dialogue with the place, I think, that they live. That they could ask a question. And, well, the place might answer them, but it depends on how open you are to how that answer might come to you. But I think that's an important thing, too, is being able to know that you can be that, you're saying, the active person in the kind of the production of this space and how things are acting out. And I think the word acting, or actings, if we even make it a noun, like, I think there's multiple sides to it, but one is to kind of see it as, acting is just a script. Here's the script, and you just carry this out. And it's highly disciplined, right? Highly controlled and trained. But I think actings also have their improvisations. And so through that same word, through that same sort of concept, there's also this potential for someone to exercise their agency or exercise their creativity, someone to exercise even their freedom. And that might be, that's a loaded one there, but in terms of through that same concept, this acting, in some ways it might seem like there is this highly controlled space, but I think in some other ways you could see this as a way of subverting that too. This is Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing.
For more information about the show, check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org. So we came back to Georges Perec, a French author who both of us have read. And The Species of Spaces was a book that we kind of mentioned preparing for our talk and for our dialogue. And I wanted to just visit that with her at the end and kind of relate some of his practices to hers, to Berthe's.
So it's actually like him sitting in Paris and just in different places, and he's just it's like an enumeration of things passing and people, like the buses going and this and this. So he describes like the very common of these spaces, the very, very general thing that is happening there, or not general, but the very, like in the specific, he's somehow formulating the places. But when I was developing the work for the maps, like this observation of different half or semi-public sites in Montreal, I saw the book and I didn't read it. I bought it, but I didn't read it because I didn't want it to come across my the development of my form. And then I read it afterwards. Right. I was very satisfied that it was very close but different.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, when I read the chapter, it's not really a chapter, but the part about the street in some of his observations, it made me wonder, he calls them practical exercises.
Like, yeah, exactly. But one of these practical exercises is, like he describes it in the book. Yeah, but I think, I mean, he does that with like this restructuring of things and then making its original structure clear. I think that's very much what I think I'm fascinated by in his work, because that's very much what I'm doing also, or what I'm trying to do, is just extracting something from a larger system and developing a new system or a new rule, or introducing a new rule and then dealing with it again. So it's it's not so much changing so much, but just introducing a rule to it. Huh. And then the old rules become clear. So that's, I think, what I'm fascinated by his, because he seems to be so free with it, and his thinking is incredible, I think.
Right. I mean, yeah. Did you, when you initially kind of set out in this, did you think you were going to be proposing something new, or were you really looking to kind of see the old rule, like you're saying? Or is that kind of in your process of kind of walking in, you know, entering into this sort of discursive space? Like, do you...
Yeah, I think I didn't know.
You didn't know, yeah.
I still don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying it better, but it's very often I'm following an interest or one stimulation or an idea or something like this, and then one leads to the next, and I really describe it, but it's not as if I would have an aim beforehand and then I would say, okay, I'm trying to develop something to serve that aim, or to finally solve this and this problem. It's really more about the process very often, and then I accumulate all this material and I still don't know how I'm going to give it back in the end, or how the exhibition will look like. Hmm. So it's very much about following an interest which vague outcome.
Right, and then decisions being made about how you're going to show that work to people.
Yeah, and in the end it might appear very closed and very as if it was laid out like this from the beginning, but it really is one little decision after the other, which makes the not even the outcome, but the it's like a cut on one point, and then something is made visible, and then I can continue. It's, and then I question myself, or I wonder if I would then would like to repeat something, or if I would find new ways. And that's also this process of going back and forth, I think. And I think it's quite good to be an artist, to have the liberty of, I mean, I can repeat an idea and just change one or two things and see what comes out.
Right.
When I do a little variation, and that's, I really enjoy that also, because it gives me so many opportunities to work with it.
Do you think of, like, a couple of words come to mind for me, like negotiation, but I sometimes like the another word, which is like navigation. Like you're kind of navigating between these ideas. You reach a point and it opens up some other sort of, I don't know, stream or river, and you're kind of navigating down there and checking that out. Do you think, like, when you show your work, are you showing the navigation, or are you showing?
Yeah, I'm trying to show the navigation and some stopping points, maybe, if we would stay in that image. It's, I'm trying to show some of the navigation, and also trying to introduce or to give the spectator something on hand to navigate themselves and to also work with it.
So we've come to the end of another episode of Geographical Imaginations. I want to thank Berthe Andriat for her time and sharing with us her ideas about space and place. Check out her work at www.berthe-andriat.com, and check out our website, as always, at www.geographicalimaginations.org. There you can find information too, and links to Berthe Andriat's work. Stay tuned next month for a continuation a little bit of this Asking Salzburg and finding more about Salzburg through an alternative city mapping project by the group who calls themselves Fraulein Flora's Favorite Hangouts. We'll go out into the field with them, and they'll show us some of their favorite hangouts. As always, this is Kevin S. Fox from Salzburg, coming to you from Radio Fabrique. Next month, look forward to it, and let's wait until then. Thanks for listening. Ciao.